This episode of Cognitive Dissonance is brought to you by our patrons. You fucking rock. Be advised that this show is not for children, the faint of heart, or the easily offended. The explicit tag is there for a reason.
Recording live from Glory Hole Studios in Chicago, this is Cognitive Dissonance. Every episode we blast anyone who gets in our way. We bring critical thinking, skepticism, and irreverence to any topic that makes the news, makes it big, or makes us mad. It's skeptical, it's political, and there is no welcome mat. This is episode 372. Two fingers were held up to help me out with that. Two. I appreciate it.
I'm here for you.
You know, we've
bro.
Been doing a lot of recording back to back to back.
No kidding, right?
I don't know what goes where at this point. We're the glory hole. I'm not sure where to stick it. It's confusing. Yeah. We are joined today at the glory hole in person. You know, anytime we get somebody live.
Yeah.
At the glory hole, that's not you, because at this point, you know, no offense here.
I get it.
Always know who's on the other side.
It's that distinguishing mark.
It's the distinguishing odor.
That you can
that's
tell.
That's the thing. Through the wall, I know it's you, buddy. We are joined by Drew. I'm already forgotten how to pronounce your last name.
Then it probably doesn't really matter.
But it does, because you're an author and you want to pimp your book and people need to Google that shit.
So well, it's not phonetic, though. So
Agree.
But Bacchus, I suppose.
Bacchus. So, Drew, thank you for joining us here at the Glory Hole. You are the author of Rise and Fall of Faith, a God to Godless story for Christians and atheists. You are also the co-president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, and no, it said on, I thought it said
that would be Dan Barker
of the Freedom from Religion.
Dan Barker would skin me alive.
Oh, about the authors, forgive me.
That's okay. That's okay.
So you are also the creator of humanistcoach.com and board president at the Clergy Project.
Ah, there we go.
Gentlemen, if I read it properly.
What a pleasure it is to sit on this side of the glory hole wall with you. Or are we on opposite walls?
I don't know. We're all on the same wall.
That's disappointing, though.
Yeah. Are we inside the glory hole, or are we just trying to picture what my role is?
And there's a verb, too, that we're missing, I think, somewhere. But
we're always missing the verb. That's the problem. It's the action word, and action we never get that one. It's just we're a bunch of nouns in a verbless world, my friend. That's terrible.
So, Drew, I want to start out. You know, I was reading your bio and I was just floored. You used to be a pastor, an evangelical pastor.
Oh, fucking yeah. Okay. Oh, shit. Yeah.
So what I want to know before we even get into the book, what I want to know is how do you get from evangelical pastor
to sitting in a fucking glory hole?
That's you. Yeah, you finished the question. It's a perfect question.
I mean, I feel like he's used to kneeling.
Yeah. So. No. Yeah, I mean, there are some things that get you. You know, it's
now
like cross
I'm the
training.
One who stands, motherfucker.
Cross training. Get it? It's a Christian joke.
I just, supplication is just in Christian the DNA joke. At this point. So evangelical, what form or format of evangelical?
Yeah, absolutely. So started off on the more mainstream and centered within evangelicalism. It can be kind of a big camp, whatever. There's a lot of diversity in it. So more just kind of your typical kind of what may appear cheese ball, whatever, evangelicalism.
Like Hell House style?
Not so much. Not like that. So you've got fundamentalism, which is way more rightward. Evangelicalism generally, or at least how we would have defined it, is a little bit more moderate, little bit more rational, a little bit more tempered.
All right.
6,000-year-old fire earth and brimstone. Or no?
Yes. Not always. It depends.
Okay. What about you?
Were you a 6,000-year-old earth guy? Or were you going seven and a half?
Yeah.
I took more of
wait and see approach.
Poetic. Yeah, kind of more, you know what I said, how I took it by the time I was a lead pastor, senior pastor, whatever. So, and by then I was on the more progressive end of evangelicalism. Evangelicalism still defined, you know, more centered on that idea of whatever the Bible says and whatever it intends to communicate is actual truth.
Okay.
God-inspired truth.
Sure.
But in how we interpreted that, it was a little bit more progressively. And so we kind of took full freedom there. At least I did. So, I mean, when you talk about the age of the earth and whatnot, my position would have been Genesis 1 and 2, or at least Genesis 1, was intended to be taken more poetically.
Okay.
So I'm not, and I was the kind of pastor who willingly and often said, I don't exactly know and I don't need to know. I'm comfortable with gray. I'm not a black and white kind of guy. And I would teach and all of that, that kind of perspective. And so I'd say Genesis 1, who the hell really knows what exactly it's saying, but whatever, however God created the earth, he did it. He may have used evolution. He may not have. Whatever he did it. And that's really what Genesis 1 is trying to tell us in poetic form.
How did you get into pastorism?
Pastoring.
Pastoriding. Pastorization.
Yeah.
How did you become pastorized?
Sheep and shit out in the field, right? Yeah.
How did you become pasteurized? That's my.
They put me in this big milking tank, and they just kept swirling the shit till I was pasteurized.
Like, did you grow up wanting to do this work? Was this something that you just?
Yeah.
Tell me about your process getting there before we move away from it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up central rural Minnesota.
That's gross.
Absolutely.
And pasteurized.
So we're out there. My grandfather was a dairy farmer, by the way. So
really
pasteurizing shit.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. That's not how I became a pastor though. But so small town, junior.
It's very pastoral up there though. Just saying.
Yes.
Landscape.
Well, we had a cow.
You're milking this for all it's worth.
One time I was trapped out in the pasture.
Thanks, Garrison Keillor. Jesus Christ.
$5 million.
We had a pasture with a cow. Just one cow at a time, though, and we would butcher it. And that would provide enough beef for 2 years. And then we'd get another cow and butcher that. And anyway, moving on.
Fuck. I'm trying so
fucking hard. All right.
Heart of the glory hole. Okay.
All right. So basically, the long and short of it is in junior high, kind of got sucked into the whole youth group vibe, mostly because I was a total fucking loser and didn't really have any friends. But so because I didn't have any friends, like youth group and church just kind of like pulled me in.
Okay.
And my parents, my mom was kind of involved. Well, my mom was pretty involved. My dad wasn't really involved at all at that point. So it wasn't like I was brought up this way. It was just like I was drawn to it personally.
Okay.
And then in the summer before my high school year, our youth group took this trip to DC to go to this conference put on by this group called Youth for Christ. And, they did this peer evangelism super conference, they called it, where they brought in teenagers from all over, the nation. And just sort of the whole idea was to give you the training and the resources. It was an 8-day conference, and to give you the training and resources you needed to win the world for Christ. And first of all, starting off with just like filling you with the kind of Jesus excitement you would need to really even want to give a shit enough to carry.
What's that life. Like? Like, did you, I mean, what, yeah. were you all in at that point? Like,
at,
or were you
at
just
that
trying
point,
to get
I wasn't. At that point, like I went into the conference going just like, yeah, you know, I just want to go and have a vacation for my parents.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
yeah, right. Absolutely. That's all I wanted.
Go, you meet girls, you hang out, right, whatever.
Exactly.
It's fine.
But then
over and over.
Standard conference stuff. It's fine.
Shit.
Throw lesbians around, whatever needs to happen. It doesn't matter.
Fuck. But yeah, no, but then it like grabbed me by the fucking balls or the heart or whatever the hell it was. And you know, hook, line, and you know, the whole fucking sinker. And so I left there and I was just like on fire. You know, they pump you full of music and rock bands, you know, Christian rock bands and all that, and pull your heart into it. And I jumped on board the Jesus train. I rode that thing hard as long as I could. And, but so I left there. So then in high school, I come back. And that year in high school, I begin like this ministry initiative in my high school. I start doing prayer groups and Bible studies in my high school. I start doing like worship services in my high school, all this shit. And so then it just became clear, like, well, I need to go on and become a pastor. You know, this is what I want to do.
So you figured this shit out in high school.
Okay. Well, at first I want to do youth ministry. So it was, it was Baptist.
Okay.
So Baptist General Conference was the specific Baptist because there's so fucking many of them.
You're a Baptist. You're at this point thinking about, are you thinking about becoming a pastor at this point? Like this is sort of like percolating in your head. Yeah. And what does that entail? Like, do you have to go to like school?
That was going to be my question. Like, how much
Moody Bible Institute or something? Mm. Or
I might've went to the Moody Bible Institute.
Did you?
Yeah. So, I mean, so my 10th grade year.
Did you slam your door and be like, you don't know me? Because Moody?
It's a different Moody.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Different. Took me a moment, but yeah.
Nobody understands me here.
Different kind of Moody. I'm so pissed and now I'm so sad. Now fuck all of you. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, my 10th grade year, I went to a mission conference that our church did and was like, wow, this is what I want to do. I want to use my whole life to serve Jesus and capture the world for Christ. But then quickly I was like, well, I want to do youth ministry. I want to like be a youth pastor and do like cool shit with teenagers. I was a teenager. So of course that's what I wanted to do as a profession. And that's what I went to Moody for. My 10th grade year, my senior pastor at that church, he was like, hey, you should check out this place called Moody. They just like do miracles and transform people into miracle workers. You need to go there. I didn't know what it was. So I'm like, okay, well then I'll apply. And it was the only college I applied to. I got in.
Is it hard to get into?
Yeah.
Is it Moody by, I don't mean this shitty. Like I'm genuinely curious. Like, because I don't know at all how any of this works. I didn't grow up religious. Like, is it a challenging curriculum? Is it challenging to get into? Or are they just like, holy shit, somebody wants to do this work and they're excited. We just want young, excited people. We'll take them and their money. Like, which is it? Or is it a combination? I'm just curious how that works.
It's kind of a combination of the two. So, I mean, academically, is it as rigorous? You know, you would get a mix of perspectives. So, which I suppose is probably the case with any college, with anything. But so like, you know, at Moody, you'd have students who transferred in from other universities and they're like, whoa, they take this shit so much more seriously here. And they provide so much fucking busy work and all this shit. And one time, Joe Stoll, who was our president at the time, he got up and he's like, okay, so we just want you all to know, like, we're testing you here. The Lord is testing you. Our goal is to give you so much fucking work. He didn't say fucking, but, you know, that was the idea. To give you so much work that you have to choose between whether or not you really want to work hard enough to have an A or whether or not you want to put God, prioritize God above that. And so what do you want most? Like, yeah, it was kind of like, do you want to have like a full life that is centered around Jesus? Or do you want to have a life that is so focused on study that in order to get A's? And so it was kind of like, you know, whatever. They just, you know, snowed you with stuff.
I have more, do you major in pasteurization?
Yeah. So
homogenization, I think is what they're calling.
So.
So weird. We just study Louis Pasteur the whole time.
It's crazy.
Like, I know that guy like the back of my hand. Like, is that what you major in, or do you major in like English lit, or like, I mean, do you major in like regular? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't know. I don't know any of this.
So in order to be a pastor, really, it all depends on your denomination.
Right.
So some denominations are much more structured. You have to go to that denomination school, and getting your seminary education is all tied into. You're getting your ordinations and you have to be ordained to get a church. And, you know, it's very structured and all to the book. With the more free flowing denominations like Baptist, Pentecostal, things like that. So for me, it's much more open.
Are they
can be.
Okay.
Not usually.
Sometimes.
But there's like a small segment that are.
Snake
yeah,
juggle.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, absolutely. Like in a circus and shit. Because church is like a circus and shit. So, but yeah, so basically like within kind of the Baptist movement, which the whole idea is each church is autonomous. If you're a Baptist church, no overseeing body, no one at all has the right to tell you how to do your shit.
Oh,
you're
really?
Fully on your own. That's what Baptism, and that's why they can
independent franchise.
Yeah, absolutely, okay. And that's why it can vary so widely, all the way from Westboro Baptist Church, where they're fucking insane and you know, picketing funerals, all the way to groups that are much more moderate. Yeah. And you know what we would
that don't stone gays. You're saying
that don't stone gays, okay, or even pro gay marriage.
Do they really? Get gays?
Yeah.
Stoned. Is that an option? Okay.
I just, but yeah, you know,
opposite so like, ends of the spectrum.
You had this whole thing like when during Obama's first run, you know, there was kind of this rise of what was called the evangelical left, which it was, you know, they were mostly Democratic voters. They were pro-social justice. And yet they also believed that the Bible was the inspired word of God, but they translated it in more progressive ways.
And okay? They just all voted Trump, right?
Yeah. I haven't heard anything about the evangelical left lately. Fuck.
But, I got to ask a question. Yeah. So like many people, when they believe because they had a reason to believe. It wasn't just that they wound up hearing it from their parents or whatever. That, like, not only did they hear it from their parents, but then they also had moments in their life that reinforced their belief. Miracles, things, crazy shit that happened to them. You were going to be a pastor. So my question is, was there some crazy shit in your life? Like, was there a thing that you thought was a miracle that ever happened to you before?
Yeah, an inspired
that
experience.
Something that...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Nothing that I would have called a miracle, but yeah, I mean, I regularly saw God working in my life.
What was it like? Like, explain that, because I'm not religious, so I don't know what that would even entail.
Yeah,
absolutely. So
he comes by and he vacuums. He
just, I would like
he
that.
Wipes down the tables.
You know what? Can he fucking move the couch and get the goddamn socks out from
so
underneath?
So dirty in here. So dirty.
But see, one day you're vacuuming. And the Bible you were missing couldn't find anywhere. You found it under the couch while you were vacuuming.
And that's God and who that planted the Bible under your
was
couch?
Was God showing you that your Bible was under there.
Or I think you're a pretty bad more? Christian if you left your Bible under the couch.
I anyway. Like if you misplaced your Bible. Man.
Is that?
But yeah, but I mean, it's stuff it? Like that. Yeah. I mean, it's just it? Simple. Yeah. Okay. Super simple stuff. It's, I mean, I tried to stay away from... I worked really hard at not over spiritualizing shit like that. So I was leery of shit like that. I encouraged others to kind of be leery of that. Like, listen, you found your Bible under the couch, not because you were praying and God performed a divine miracle, but because you lost it under the couch and now you found it, just like you also found your fucking pen.
Yeah. Right.
You know, yeah. So that was more, I would like to, maybe others would disagree, but I think I was a little bit more of a rationally minded Christian and pastor. But yeah, things like that. So, I mean, like, kind of, you know, the beginning stages of my faith as my faith was forming, you know, there were like sort of these kind of big prayers that I prayed that all of a sudden, like, I look back and I'm like, wow, like that actually happened. This was kind of a big thing. So maybe that was God that answered it, you know? So like we talk about that conference, that peer evangelism uh-huh. conference. So, you know, and I also mentioned that, like, I didn't have any friends when I was in junior high. And so, or at least not, I don't know, whatever, not what I wanted anyway. And,
none of them were girls.
Yeah. Well, that's true too.
can relate.
So before I'm going to the conference, like I'm getting ready for the conference and I read over this brochure and it's promising it's going to like transform your faith and, you know, put you on fire for Jesus and all this shit, which is a good thing. On fire with Satan is bad, but on fire for Jesus is good.
It gotcha. It depends on why enthusiasm. You're on fire.
Yeah.
I feel like
it's also
on
a
fire,
different
just...
part of your body. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's just
on fire
your hands.
For Satan is always Uranus.
Right.
It's
all the time.
Yeah. It's weird because I just get that after Mexican food.
I was going to say those scorpion peppers or whatever. That was,
Indian
that was
food
the
sometimes.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
depends.
Sometimes it's worth it. Yeah. You know, what are you going to do?
It is. Fuck,
you roll know, your windows sometime, down, you know, whatever.
Some, you know, when the shit feels really good, it's just a good fucking shit, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, so, yeah. So,
yeah, where you like want to weigh yourself after, like, yeah. I
you're like, oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah. You like high five your wife?
Come look, I see what I did.
I can fit my suit.
You come out, check your vertical, you're just like, holy shit. Really? Holy shit.
All right, I don't even know anymore.
At the peer evangelism conference.
Oh, yeah. So
which is different than the pure evangelism. That's a racist one.
Although,
that's not
well,
to be.
Well, at the peer evangelism conference, there was a purity rally.
That's disgusting.
Where we you declared guys, ourselves to stay virgin until we were married.
Did you guys win? Did you guys put like your rings together and be like, form of a virgin? Like, is that? Oh, wait, that's all of us. Forget it.
Right.
I don't even know. But no. So leading up to this conference, I had
this. I
would have
gotten married at fucking 17. Yeah. I'd have been like, I don't, whatever it takes.
I'd have gotten married. Yeah. 13 and a half.
I'd have fucking engagement rings like fucking bling. I make it rain with those fucking things. Doesn't catch matter. One. Who catches
but
one?
But that's why you get married when you're fucking 20 years old.
That's and I'm joking.
No, for
around.
Real.
Like, for real.
Yeah. I got married when I was 20.
Is it because? Yeah.
Yeah, right? Because I want to fucking fuck. Why the fuck would you get married?
I don't know. I don't know. I feel a lot of pressure right now. Is this a
why would you get married, damn
get
it?
Get on your knee.
What the
get
fuck?
Get on your knee.
Was your wife evangelical too?
Yes. Okay. And I actually, in high school, led her to place her trust in Jesus. Oh. I led her to the Jesus train.
Wow.
Oh.
Yes. So, if that was actually part of her. So she was seriously, my wife.
So
was,
she was DTF until she was found your girl.
Right.
And then she locked up like a fucking clamshell.
She was the hottest girl in school. She
You're
was
the
hottest girl in school.
True.
In yearbook. For our yearbook, she was voted to, you know, the yearbook hall of fame where you vote on shit.
Yeah, most likely.
So she was voted two things.
Most likely two. I have some really, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go
she
ahead.
Was
no,
voted
go ahead.
Class flirt and most secretly desired for a date. And so, and then in our junior year of high school, so I'm standing in the hallway, just like staring at her like a creepy fuck. And I was like,
again, I can relate.
And I'm like, God, she is so amazing.
This is your miracle.
Yeah, this is one
is
of
your
them.
Miracle.
Yeah,
yeah,
God works in mysterious ways. Or
and I said, God, she is so amazing.
I've got to put it in her butt. Just what?
It's not if you
might be
if you
said.
Would like to bless me. I said, if you would like
bless
to,
myself this would, whole time.
If you would like to bless me, I would like to bless her.
If you would like to bless me, Lord. I said, now I can only date girls who trust in Christ.
Okay.
Okay. Sure. Super Jesus
yeah,
like
no,
me.
I
can't date anyone who's not because I took this shit serious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And so I said, God, if you would like to bless me, lead her to trust in Jesus, join the train with me, and then lead her to me to
join the
be
train
able
sounds
to date
like
her.
A different thing.
Jesus train. Jesus okay, train. Right, not, Jesus train.
I just choose.
No, it was just two people, okay?
Okay, train, no, can, no, yeah, yeah.
Well, it's three.
Yeah.
Because every marriage has Jesus.
Wait, every marriage is an MMF
Jesus,
fucking threesome?
Yeah, Jesus is no, always in the caboose.
That's a thing, though. That's a thing.
You got like, evangelical, a finger cuffer with Jesus?
Evangelical churches teach that like any marriage that's going to be strong is a fucking cord of three knots or three ropes or whatever. So it's the husband, the wife, and Jesus, and you work together. Because if it's just you and your
that's
wife, it's not going to be
fuck.
A strong
you know
rope.
What, you know what you do if you're evangelical? You get the set of three butt plugs, and you name one the Father, one the Son, and one the Holy Spirit.
Holy fuck.
And so you can always both be penetrating.
Three different sizes. It's like small, medium, and large.
It's like what? Which one's the big boy?
Like the three that's fucking like, bears. Like the three bears.
She keeps saying, that's not it. Yeah.
That's not just right. Yeah. That's not just right.
Oh, but that one, that's just right.
Yeah. All right. So you got these trainer butt plugs and she's a flirt.
Well,
so.
and then I led her to Jesus and we got, she was the only girl. She was my second date. And my first girlfriend.
Oh,
yeah. And we got married, saved ourselves from marriage, got married
at
had
20
kids. Yeah. At 20.
At 20. All right.
I'm 20. We're
How
married
many kids?
For 13 years. Two kids.
Congratulations.
That's awesome.
13 yeah. years.
Yeah. And wow. My kids are fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scary as fuck.
How old are they?
Awesome. 14 and 12.
Wow. Yeah. So you've been married 13 years?
Yeah, we were.
Wait,
married.
One.
I'm not married anymore.
Oh, okay, because I was like, wait a minute. I was like, hold on a second.
This motherfucking former evangelical can't even fucking
right
add.
Now,
no
now.
Wonder.
No,
I saved myself, but
no,
I have.
I just thought maybe she was standing
countdown.
At the altar like this, you know, 14
right?
and you married 13.
No,
okay,
no,
I
no,
see.
No.
I see what you mean.
No,
okay,
no,
no. All right. So you're, okay, all right.
Yeah, no, we got, we were divorced in 2013.
Okay.
Gotcha.
The stereotype is, and it's stereotypical because it often happens. It's mm-hmm. a stereotype for a reason. So the stereotype is that with former preachers like me who become non-believers and come out as non-believers, or at least come out to their spouses as non-believers, the stereotype is that when divorce happens, it happens because the spouse can't handle the fact that you are not, that you don't believe in God anymore.
Sure.
And so it's actually a thing where you know, it's like you broke your vows, because your wedding vows were made before God. They were built on the foundation of God.
Oh.
I mean, it's in a church.
Right.
It's filled with prayers.
It
like
never
they are literally your marriage from a Christian perspective with a Christian. I mean, obviously if you're not, if you don't have a Christian wedding, it's different, but so the mindset is your wedding was performed. It was built on a covenant with God. And now you don't believe in God. So you have you've ripped out the foundation. So the marriage is now no longer valid. And the still believing spouse has an obligation to divorce and leave you.
What?
Yes. That's more fundamentalist. Most evangelical, evangelicals.
Oh, I have to do that, but I don't want to. So I'm just
Don't even think about it that way.
Yeah, right.
You know? So, and my wife, she never thought about it. That wasn't our thing. For us, it was more just with all the shrapnel of all the shit of my own deconversion and leaving the church, and just that just changed everything so profoundly made sense for us to stay together.
I was just curious if that, because there are some people who that is a real problem. That is a genuine real problem that we get messages from people all the time and they'll say, oh, you know, I don't know that I can tell my wife that I'm a non-believer. I don't know that I can tell my husband I'm a non-believer, because if I do, it could really ruin our marriage.
Yeah.
And I'm still doing all the same stuff I've been doing forever. I'm still going to church. I just don't believe in it. It's driving me nuts. And, you know, what do you say to that person? You know, they're in love with someone, but that other person, that love's conditional. That love is conditional on whether or not they're still a believer.
Absolutely.
And it's crazy. It's a bad situation to be in. So we run into that all the time. I'm just curious if it, you know.
So a good friend of mine, Dave, and he's at the Clergy Project, serves on the board with us and everything. And so, but Dave came from a more fundamentalist background than I did. And so his wife stayed with him. But when he came out, you know, just to family at first privately, you know, to them that I'm no longer a believer. That's why I'm not pastoring anymore. His grown children stood up and said, okay, well, you know, this means we can't associate with you anymore.
Holy shit.
His kids?
Yeah. And
well, they don't have a covenant with your kids, Bill, do you?
But the more fundamentalist, more like far right words, side tradition there, you have to fucking, it's almost like, you know, like Jehovah's Witnesses and shit, where like they got to like shun
like
you.
Disfellowship like disfellowship and shit.
Yeah. So it's like that. So they're like, since you don't believe in God anymore, like we have to shun you. You're not allowed.
And that sucks too, because if they would have done that when they were younger, he wouldn't have to pay child support.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Man,
like that's bullshit. Like fucking shun me when you're young. That way I don't have to put you through college. You little
exactly,
shit.
Exactly. Right.
But
all of a sudden my Tuesdays and Thursdays free right up.
Sorry.
But no, but so he hasn't seen his grandkids in years. So like his grown children don't let him see his grandkids.
Jeez. He saves a lot on grandchildren gifts though. You know,
right? Christmas is cheaper. I'm looking for
you guys
downside.
In your fucking humor. Always laughing about shit. This is shit. Damn it.
Nothing's that serious.
I do though, genuinely though, feel awful for that. That's terrible.
No, it's terrible.
You know,
it's terrible.
You're this, you know, you spend your whole life raising these children and then they're just like, this other thing it's more important. Yeah.
Well, that fucking sucks because you taught them to be religious.
Yeah.
Right?
Right?
Sure. No, that's fucking true.
You taught them to be religious and then it turns out it bites you in the ass and you're like, well, fuck me. I fucked that oversight. Fuck me.
Yeah.
Gee, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's a month. Ugh.
I didn't even think of that, but that's
like
true.
American history X.
It's his fault.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like he taught the other guy to be a Nazi and then he kills you at the end. This is terrible. This is awful.
You got a Jewish guy like way back in the 1920s being like, yeah, this Nazism shit. It looks like it has some potential.
It's going places.
I can't believe I just said that. You fuckers are pulling this shit out of me.
He's like walking to the chamber and he's like, it looked good on the front
this
end.
Guy,
it looked good on
this
the front
guy
end.
I walked in thinking he was like, no, I'm never going to tell a Nazi joke.
I'm never going
to
do it.
I'm sitting at home listening to this cognitive dissonance shit. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe some of the shit they say. And now here I am making jokes about fucking Nazis and Jews.
Yes, as soon as you enter the glory hole, your fucking morals go right down the drain.
That's for sure.
Which is good.
Fucking shot in my face.
All right, so tell me about your deconversion. How did that process take place?
So, it's not an easy, just all kinds of shit. I mean, so it's like a 2-year process. where, you know, it begins, you know, as an evangelical whose faith, whose everything, your morality, your sense of ethics, like everything. I was all the way hard.
Your day job, your morning, every single thing you're doing is revolving everything. Around this.
But it was all centered not just on ministry or on church or even on faith in God. It was all, everything was rooted in specifically in the Bible. And so for me, what really was the beginning of the downfall of it all was as I began to have bigger questions, stronger questions, questioning the Bible's credibility. Mm-hmm. And as you know, as a good Christian, as a faithful Christian follower of Christ, you have a problem. You seek out God in prayer. God, I have this issue. God, this shit with the Bible, it's not making sense. Like, I'm looking at this huge question.
Help me. Take me into that.
The credibility?
Yeah. So I'm going to make a presumption. Tell me where I'm wrong. Not your first rodeo with the Bible.
No.
Right?
No.
Real familiarity with it, comfort level with it. You know it. You're teaching it. This is the way, the truth, the life, light. I don't know which it is. You're on this thing, right?
Yeah.
It's life.
So what changed that? I know. So what changed?
We looked it up like a week ago.
Trading in the flashlight for the fleshlight. Anyway, yeah.
So, yeah, I get it then. Yeah. I get it then. No, actually, asked and answered.
It's a good trade.
So why was it all of a sudden? I would trade every flashlight I own.
Be in the dark forever. I don't care.
If I've got a fleshlight, I'd prefer to be in the dark. Are you kidding me?
I don't know.
I don't want to look at that shit. I'm in that room.
Well, who says I got to use the fleshlight alone?
It's true.
That's true.
It's just that I'm so alone. Oh, shit. That's terrible. So, what changed about the Bible that all of a sudden you're dubious of pieces of it that you previously, I presume, were not? Yeah. Like, where do those questions come from? How does that Genesis begin?
So,
Genesis begin. Gotcha.
Genesis 1 is all poetic. It's this long line of what I call it the desk drawer, where it's like, okay, so everything that you're comfortable working with, studies and whatever, it's all on like the desktop of your mind. Okay. That's where you're working with shit. Anytime something though, maybe it's an archaeological study that says that, findings show that the city of Nazareth was destroyed 500 years before it comes into the biblical timeline where Jesus was born or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So these studies come across and you're like, oh shit, well, this contradicts or challenges my biblical perspective. It doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, rather than leaving it on the desktop where you're working comfortably with everything, you open that bottom right-hand desk drawer and you toss that article in there and you throw it to the periphery, to the side.
Sure.
And the idea is not that it doesn't matter, but that, well, for now it doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit. But I trust God that, you know, one day when he wants it to make sense, he'll make it make sense. Or another study will come along that will validate the biblical perspective and disqualify this study.
They're eventually going to find
Noah's
Ark on the mountaintop.
Exactly.
Or whatever,
eventually they'll find another study by another guy to disqualify this one. So for now, I set it to the side, to the periphery, and I don't worry about it in that bottom right-hand desk drawer. And so just, you know, over years of just every time that happens, you just throw it down there, you throw it down there, you throw it down there. And, you know, I can't say exactly what study it was, but eventually it's like you open the desk drawer to throw one more article down there or one more critique against the Bible down there. And then you go to slam it shut and it doesn't slam shut. It's like all of a sudden, and then you look down and it's like, and then the shit's just overflowing. And you're like, oh my God, like there's all this shit that I've shoved to the side.
Sure.
That doesn't make sense. And now it's like before I just wasn't paying attention to it. Now all of a sudden I'm looking at it like all together collectively and it just, wow, this is overwhelming critique.
That's interesting because for some people it's the exact opposite. It's like one moment, right? Yeah. There's a moment, but yours was more a gradual building until it finally overwhelmed you. But it's mostly, you know, for there's some people out there that are just like, there's a moment where they're like, holy shit, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. And the thing that strikes me about that analogy is that it has to really matter to you that you are always trying to be intellectually honest. So the only way that your breakdown happens is if you're really trying all the time to believe true things and to be intellectually honest, right? Yeah. Because the easier thing, and I think for a lot of people, and I think there's a lot of studies that bear this out, you know, there are few things easier than to compartmentalize the things that we don't like, to put them in that drawer, and to just forget them, to be okay with them. In fact, for I know there's studies that say, like, the more challenging something is to you, the more it reinforces dearly held beliefs, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what it's called, but it's got some catchy name I can't recall. But
yeah,
I think the only thing that breaks that down is that if more important than those defense mechanisms, those psychological defense mechanisms, is intellectual honesty. Mm-hmm. So it strikes me as interesting that there had to be that moment where it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
I'm going to break down. My sense of honesty and integrity is in question if I don't address this. Does that seem in keeping with your experience?
Absolutely. So I was raised, so I had this fiery fundamentalist grandfather who was like he wasn't Baptist. He hated, well, maybe not hated Baptist, but he was kind of anti-Baptist for whatever reason. But he had very much that Baptist independent spirit. Okay. I have the spirit of God in me and nobody, you know, the spirit of God within me, which teaches me truth, and nobody can correct that because I have a pipeline to God and nobody can supersede that. And so he taught
Does
me
he
from
sell
the moment
food buckets?
I was young.
Is your grandfather sell food buckets? Right? I know a guy.
Oh, serious. You know what? He was probably a big fan of those who did sell.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Those buckets. Oh, wow. Yeah, absolutely. Oh. Absolutely. But anyway, from the time I was little, raised to seek truth above all else. Nothing matters. Seek truth over authority, because I was regularly told church leaders often fuck shit up. Church leaders, they don't know everything just because they have their fancy degrees. It's kind of an anti-intellectualism from him, very much so.
Okay.
And so it's just because they have fancy degrees, just because some moronic board put them in a place of leadership, doesn't mean that they know truth. And from his, the Bible alone is truth. Seek truth above all else. And so eventually, fast forward years, I come to a point where I'm going, well, wait a minute. What if in my pursuit of truth, I begin to realize that, you know, it's not even in the Bible either.
Sure.
And since I had years, a couple decades worth of just inputting in me, it doesn't matter if your family cuts you out. And he would tell me that. Truth before family, truth before community, truth before everything. Truth is more important than anything else you can ever do. And so that was instilled in me from the time I was young. And so it just made sense then. Once I began to see that truth was beyond the Bible, well, I've been instructed my whole life to seek truth over everything, even family. So of course I did.
You've got a story called the Bible is the truth, right?
Yeah.
And truth before everything else.
Yeah.
And then at some point, the Bible and truth are no longer reconcilable. And so you've got a crossroads.
Yeah.
You got that crossroads. And for you, truth wins out. Yeah. And I think that's a real interesting spot to be in. So you deconvert over the course of 2 years. Mm-hmm. You start going down this road of inevitability. The dominoes start falling. The questions don't add up. I'm making some assumptions. Yeah. You tell me where I'm wrong.
No, absolutely.
And then what happens?
Yeah, I mean, well, eventually it became clear. So, and I went through, because my whole, you know, my psyche, just my whole sense of identity was incredibly wrapped up within this whole Jesus thing. And so as I was edging toward the point of
edging is great.
I know, right?
Yeah. Big fan.
Good stuff.
I almost stopped for a moment and that wasn't intentional, but then I was like, oh fuck. I love fucking edging.
I get like 30 minutes. Seconds.
So
that's embarrassing.
Well, I mean, you know, when you're edging with Jesus, since he is the third of the three in your marriage.
Yeah, that's weird. That's, you know, that's just, part yeah, right? real weird.
Is that kind of creepy?
You look up, you're like,
I keep looking behind.
You good too, bro?
How's
you
that?
Good?
No.
How's that?
So there
are, can we be in the middle house?
If you look up.
The Holy Ghost is like a black fist dildo, you know, or just.
Yeah, wait, are you ever like intimidated? Like, what do you got? What are you working with? What the? Oh, all right.
So
all right, you go second.
So my mother. Let me tell you about my mother.
Okay,
so,
that's a weird transition. Yeah. Though. I'm just saying, Drew, we don't know each other, but this segue makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
So my parents are awesome. They're both very much still Christian believers. Okay. Very much so. Okay. And a lot of this has kind of broken their heart, but I'm not from the more fundamentalist tradition where you cut them off. No, I'm from the more moderate evangelical where, well, no, you continue to love them. You know, you still pray that God will save them. They believe I'm going to hell if nothing changes. Right. So they still pray for me that I won't go to hell, that I'll come back and all that. But they're super like, they try and be supportive. They work so hard at it. Seriously, my parents are fucking amazing. And so my mom, like, she listens to like podcasts I'm on and things like that. So I'm telling her,
this one,
mom,
don't listen to
You don't, you don't listen to this
mom,
one.
This one,
Drew's mom. This one. I'm so sorry. Drew is a real nice young man.
Drew's mom. This is for you. Are you single?
Drew's mom. You an edging?
God. This guy's like, I never will tell her. I will never tell her. I will never say it. I won't even like they like there's somebody beating him nearly to death. He's like, I'll never say I was on that show. I'll never admit it.
Here's the thing is I haven't told her yet not to listen. She could be listening right fucking now. I haven't told her yet. So we have to catch her.
You better catch her. Catch her before it airs. It airs on Monday. You have 3 days. It's like fucking 48 hours. It's like ticking down.
The first 48, right? Like,
because I'll tell you, but you know, somebody's gonna send a clip or something to my mom and be like, "You really have to hear what he said."
Did you get involved in the clergy project before you left religion, or did you get involved after?
Yeah, it was after. So I actually left the church, embraced atheism in 2012, and then I went a full 2 years before I. You know, before I knew of a single other pastor, religious leader who, like, I thought I was completely isolated. I thought I was like the only, you know, one in the world like me. And then it was in 2014 where I discovered the Clergy Project. And at that point, the Clergy Project, it started off as a project. You know, now it's its own 501c3 nonprofit. But in 2011 is when it started off. So, and then I didn't discover it until 2014, 2 years after I had totally, you know, finished my deconversion. So
I want to take you one step back and then we'll talk more about the Clergy Project. But like, you know, I'm a little fascinated. So you dedicate your whole life from high school forward to being a minister and then you leave ministry.
Yeah.
What do you do for work?
Well, I mean,
I get it. You spend your whole life being a doctor and you're like, fuck it, I'm not a doctor.
You got
it.
You have a degree from Moody Bible Institute, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have
a BA.
And I'm not trying to be shitty. I'm just such a terrifying thing to do.
It's everything. That's like the number one concern.
Yeah.
I mean, really, finances are the number one concern, but that's connected to
to
your profession.
What do you do on Wednesday when you wake up?
Exactly. So.
After that, you're asking me.
That's
it's
at like
9:17 or whatever. Now
I get up at 9:16.
So, you got some good porn on your phone.
No, I got the ASIC here, a flashlight. It's no worries.
Ass or pussy, though. I mean,
the mouth. Actually.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
mouth,
shit. You
know? All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Shit. But yeah, no, I mean,
hi, Drew's mom. Hi, Drew's mom. How you doing?
Hey, Drew's mom. Ass or pussy?
What is wrong with you?
That's a legitimate
why?
Question.
Why? As I was mentioning my mother, I was just like, why? This cannot be good. This cannot be good. But I was bringing,
like, is it a mood thing? I guess.
I brought her in with such noble intentions of how I was saying, don't listen to this.
Is it Flag Day?
She needs
your
to know
birthday,
not
like
to listen to this. Oh my God! Someone is gonna tell her. Some fucking heretic in Malacca, Minnesota, is gonna listen to this. To try and scope it out. Because that's what they do is they like find like, so even for the shit that like no Christian should be exposed to, someone has to know what it's like so that they can report back to the,
yeah,
you know,
they're like,
they're the scout.
I'll
and so somebody's going to scout this out and they're going to be like, oh my God.
Yeah. But how bullshit is that? They're like, I'll take this one for the team. It turns out blowjobs are terrible, guys. Like, yeah. I did a little research.
I just want to say one star at the Glory Hole. I gave it a Yelp review.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I will will say the glory holes in Minnesota are about 2 stars. They're about Tom's, 2 stars.
Tom's.
All the guys have beards.
I'll tell you what.
Oh, shit.
All I know is St. Paul is not a saint.
Fuck.
Hi, Drew's mom.
But no, you know. Oh, you betcha. Oh, you betcha. Oh, you betcha. Oh, you betcha. Don't you know? Don't you know? Don't you know? Don't you know?
You go to the wrong one, and there's a wood chipper on the other side.
Oh! Well, somebody told me today, they said, when I said I was going to be, I was going to enter the glory hole.
Right.
Tonight, yeah. Is what I said. And they said, well, either you're going to be on a podcast or they said, or just make sure there's not a dog kennel next door. Yeah.
You have to put your dick in the peanut butter first.
And then you.
So anyway.
So what work? Let's go back to work. Yeah. I don't know why you got distracted.
Yeah. I don't know. Something about fucking peanut butter and with the dog. So,
yeah. If your mom likes it in the ass, but we'll go.
Oh,
I
come
just
on.
Accept
it. It's my mother.
Jesus.
My mother. Sweet. What the fuck is
Minnesota.
Wrong with you?
What's wrong
my
with
mother?
So much stuff. So many
you
things are wrong.
You sick
with me.
Bastard.
She does.
Go slow. It's fine. So again, we just
God, let's he's leaving.
Back on track.
He's taking his headphones.
I'm done with this shit. I'm done with it.
He's sweating.
I'm done with this. Guys,
he's sweating profusely.
Here.
We just turned the air
I
on.
Came
it's weird.
Here and good faith.
Exactly what he lost.
Exactly. Yeah.
From now on, back here. From now on, I'm adding a clause that my mother cannot be discussed.
Well, you brought her up. I didn't know about her. All right, so
okay.
All right, so back on track. Focus, Drew. Focus.
You know, though, talking about scouts and Christianity. So there was this organization, this group, whatever, where they like they screen movies, and then they write about like there's a few of them actually, and then sure. they write about like all the shit that's in the movie why right. you yeah, why you shouldn't let your
police.
Kids see it.
Yeah, the outrage
you know,
police.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
it was
and
an
so
Angelina
like,
Jolie movie that we watched for another yep. show. Another show,
yeah.
And they had this entire review of like the two scenes where you could kind of see her butt. And they're like,
oh yeah,
it's just
so
just
terrible.
Awful. I can't believe you.
To be honest, I could easily dedicate 500 words to Angelina Jolie's butt. No problem. No problem. All but adjectives. No.
Do you go with the Holy Ghost on that one? I don't know. You know, like, is it the Holy Ghost or anyway?
Yeah. But no, but like
a lot of verbs.
So I talked with this guy this one time where that was his role. His role was, and he saw himself as at least he presented himself right. as someone who sacrificed, you know, and was willing to
I
endure
guess I'll look at Angelina Jolie's
to watch
butt.
All these horrible Ugh, movies.
God, I hate
so,
that,
so much.
To
the
expose
worst
his
ever,
mind to all this terrible filth.
You walk in and
for the good of the church.
It's like a fucking sprinkler, that guy.
Okay, honey, I gotta go to work. It's Sunday. I gotta go to work, you grateful bitch.
Oh, fuck me. So
for work. Yeah.
Careers.
So you leave ministry yeah. and then you're like, hey, I got a degree in telling people shit that's not
right.
true.
So, yeah. So
you
I
go
mean,
to sales and marketing. Yeah.
Well, no, well, I had 2 degrees. So I had you asked earlier about like what my degree was mm-hmm. or something like that. So it was I had a BA in pastoral studies.
Okay.
Yeah. From Moody. Yeah. And then I had an MDiv. For a Master of Divinity at seminary, which is an MD.
You don't have to feel embarrassed. I have an English lit degree. It's fine. We can all feel the same.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's,
no.
fine. It's fine. Totally.
But yeah, no.
Easy.
So
how's that continental philosophy for you, buddy? All right. So you have
but
no
yeah,
education.
I mean, so right, exactly. Or it's totally fucking worthless. So, but no, what I did though for me, I worked out. During grad school, in addition to pastoring, I was also waiting on tables.
Okay.
And so with the first, I was at 2 churches. The second church was, I was the lead pastor. I was full time. The first church, I was like a staff pastor and I was part time.
Okay.
And so I did that part time while I also waited on tables full time at a downtown steakhouse.
I got a crazy question.
Oh, shit.
What yeah. is it? What does that pay? What
yeah,
is
wait, we'll
pay?
Edit this out.
What does a pastor pay? I can
yeah.
edit it out, but
we'll
what
edit
is it,
this out.
What
yeah,
it
no,
pay?
It's, I
have
it's
no
fine.
Idea.
Yeah.
Super curious.
The average, and you don't have to edit this out, but yeah, the average pastor in the U.S. makes $30,000 to $35,000 a year. So that's
below
average.
The poverty line, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if it is or not, but I think 25 is or something.
Well, and when you think about how, I mean, the more fundamentalist 30 you skew, the more fundamentalist you skew, the more likely you are to have, you know, more kids. And so, I mean, you've got six kids on 30 grand a year and your spouse isn't allowed to work because you're in a fucked up fundamentalist tradition.
Oh my God.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't take a shit for $30,000 a year.
That's where the stereotype.
You were probably killing it though at the steakhouse. You're probably getting as much money at the steakhouse as you were as a pastor.
When I was at the steakhouse and I was at the church, that first church part time.
Yeah.
I mean, my what I brought in at tips at the steakhouse was three times what I eventually made as lead pastor of the second church. Three times, just in tips.
Wow. I have no doubt of that.
Yeah.
I have no doubt of that. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's so cheap.
And that's the way it is. Now, I mean, they'll throw in though other things that you wouldn't normally get.
Get yourself like a fucking gold plated helicopter or whatever. Yeah. Should have been prosperity. I've got to tell you, like, if I'm going to fucking make some shit
exactly.
up, that's going to be prosperity gospel.
I want to fucking.
I'm teasing you. I know that you have good intentions the whole time.
Yeah, but. I mean, really though, like, I mean, so you get to a point where you realize it's all bullshit. What are your options? What do you want to do? You know, I mean, you can transition out and try and for me, what I did, so I used those connections from the steakhouse from my first church. I used that to, I talked to the general manager there and I was able to be brought back and became the customer service manager of that same steakhouse.
Okay.
And that was my transitional career out of ministry. Okay. So for me, that worked out well.
Yes, you had a good option.
But I mean, you look back, like at times, like I wonder like, huh. Knowing what I know now, seeing what I see now, like, huh, what are the options I could have used? And yeah, I mean, don't fuck around. Like, honestly, I loved being a pastor. Like, I loved it.
I actually think it sounds like a great job. I think it sounds like a great job.
You're doing positive things.
Yeah.
I mean, all the supernaturalist bullshit aside, right. You are doing incredible work especially if you're on the more progressive end of things, social justice, community initiatives, which I was. I mean, we were doing powerful shit.
Plus, you get to wake up and give a shit about what you do.
Right.
Yeah.
Hold on, though.
Yeah.
So I always say this, and we say this on the show all the time. I would probably have a lot more in common with an evangelical who's far left than I would ever have in common with a Republican atheist. We're going to actually have a Republican atheist on next month.
Yeah.
But.
Really?
I think,
it's gonna be exciting.
I think we probably, before you even stopped believing, we probably believed and thought a lot of the same things. Social justice minded, you know, you probably wouldn't have voted for Trump if you were religious.
Oh, hell no.
No.
I voted for Obama both times as a pastor.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah.
You knew he was black though, right?
Wait, you know what?
Legitimate question.
I never actually read the news, so I don't know. I just saw the name Barack, and since Barack is in the Bible, that's why I voted for him. Yeah.
Nice.
Barack was one of the judges.
He
was a good guy. Okay. Barack is a positive figure in the Old Testament.
Hussein?
not there. Not in the Bible.
Not as much.
At least not in the Christian one. Is there Hussein in the Quran?
Almost certainly is, right?
Right?
Well, there I don't know. Have to be.
I mean, would there? I mean,
I would think so.
Maybe.
Don't they all name
actually
like, don't they all like name it? It's like everybody's like Abraham in that religion.
Abraham or Muhammad?
Muhammad.
Yeah. Right?
Sure. There's a bunch of Muhammads.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's like Smith.
All Muhammad's kids were Muhammad.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your book. You wrote a book. Now, is this about your transition? Because the book is called The Rise and Fall of Faith, A God to Godless Story for Christians and Atheists. Now, did you write anything about yourself in that book? Did you write anything about your transition in that book? Or is it more sort of an open, just like, here's how I see it sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So it centers, if you will, on my story. So the rise of my faith, the fall of my faith, and then the last part, the rise above faith. Okay. So it centers on my story. But myself and others that I kind of brought into the discussion of where, you know, as I'm gaining feedback from others, said, you know what, let's see if we can do something more than just tell another story. Like, whatever. We all have a fucking story. It's whatever. Here's my fucking story. But it's a good fucking story. Okay. But it's just another bullshit story. What can we do that's different? And so what we did, we, we decided to take this and use it to really foster a bigger discussion. At least that's the idea, to foster a discussion between those of faith and those without. And so it centers on my story, but then we take it in, like, each chapter ends with a series of questions. Some questions are focused towards Christian, you know, evangelical Christians, believers. Others are focused towards atheists and skeptics. Others just towards, you know, people in general. Just seeking to kind of build bridges. It's so easy, for instance, for evangelical Christians to look at atheists and be like, oh, you guys, you have no moral core. You're evil. You're communist. You're whatever.
True.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, most of it is true.
Accurate.
But, you know, it's easy for them to look at that and say, like, that, you know, you make all these assumptions. And likewise, then vice versa, for atheists to look at Christians, be like, you're ignorant. You're stupid. You have no ability to rationalize or logic.
Again, where am I missing?
Also,
it's true.
But
hi, Drew's mom. How you doing?
But so
I bet she goes, but
stop it.
What? She does. I know.
Don't me.
Like in the shower.
Don't embarrass us.
That's it. I'm going.
He's going now. He's done.
All conditioner right. Is a surprisingly He's gentle done. Lube. You don't know. You don't know.
It stings a little.
Like, not to me.
You're a thoughtful lover.
I thought it'd feel good. Oh, fuck.
The worst decision ever.
It's just like
worst decision ever was to come here. God. The second worst was to sit back down in the chair after I was halfway out the fucking door.
He goes out to have a drink with his buddies. Later. I don't know. I thought it'd be different at the glory hole, but yeah, not. It wasn't. So weird. So weird.
And in every glory hole video I've ever seen, there's a girl on the other end of the wall, but apparently it's usually a guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. What the fuck?
That's the mystery of the glory hole. It's like the Trinity.
You don't know.
It's so weird.
It's like the mystery of the Trinity. Like, you just have to trust in the glory hole like you trusted in God. That's how it works.
It's almost like those videos don't reflect the accuracy of life experiences.
I mean, as long as there's not braces and shit, does it really matter?
Get the camera in there. That's weird. Huh. Where's the camera even go? Anyway.
Fuck. I don't even know.
You're not drinking it out of a glass?
The book. We're talking about the book.
Oh, the book. The book.
Let's transition back to the book so you can make money.
Let's be honest. There's not really any money to be made in it.
No,
but
authors don't make a lot of money.
Nothing at all. But no, but so, I mean, basically the idea was to create this, you know, foster this greater dialogue. And so there's various tools and whatnot in there to do that. So
now
it centers on my story, but it's
not
bigger than that.
Yeah. So have you transitioned from Christian evangelical pastor to humanist practitioner, humanist orator?
Are you evangelical about humanism?
Well, I mean, like evangelist?
Do you evangelize the cause of humanism?
Yeah, well,
you know what I mean by that.
Yeah. Maybe kind of. So, I mean, yes. Am I a proponent of humanism? Abso-fucking-lutely. Am I someone, though? I mean, I've never, even when I was a pastor, I was never someone to, like, seek you out. And I was never a big, like, witnesser, like, proselytizer. Like, I was like, whatever. Like, I just want to build, when I was a pastor, I was like, I just want to build good community.
Sure.
And just do powerful shit. And honestly, I really don't care what you believe. Like, even as a pastor, I was like, did I believe in heaven and hell and that your actions make it? Absolutely. But I was like, I'll just let you and God sort that out.
You believed in hell?
I did believe in hell.
Okay.
And
hell was the thing that stopped me from believing. So hell was the thing that made me not believe in hell.
Yeah,
because for me, it was like, there's literally nothing I could do on a finite timeline that could warrant an infinite punishment. So for me, I started thinking about hell and I was like, that doesn't make any sense. And actually for my wife, it was the same thing. Hmm. Hell is the thing that turned her into a universalist from a Roman Catholic, because for her, it didn't make any sense. Like, hell doesn't make any sense. Like, hell is it's like the stupidest, dumbest punishment for, you know, I looked at my neighbor's wife's ass and now I've got a demon with a fucking barbed cock fucking me. You know, it's like, it doesn't make any sense at all. It literally is. And I grew up, the people that would tell me stories, I was a Lutheran slash, my dad was a Lutheran, my mom was a Catholic. We grew up in the Catholic tradition, but the people who influenced me about religion were all not Catholic. They were all born again Christians. So for them, it was all about like, they're going to tell me about the worst shit that's going to happen. There's going to be fucking locusts in armor and they're going to eat your eyes out and it's going to be the end of the world. And this is a, and that's all I ever heard growing up. And I was terrified. I was terrified of the end of the world. Yeah. I was absolutely like my whole life. I was petrified of it. And I was also petrified of hell because they would talk about, because not only do they talk about the end of the world and Armageddon, they also talk about hell and how bad it is and how it's going to suck for you. And man, it's going to be the worst because they're going to fucking melt your eyes out. And then they're going to put them back and then melt them again. And then put them back and melt them again. But it's like, fucking make up your mind, devil. You know, like
fucking torture porn.
Exactly. Spiritualized. That's all it is.
Absolutely.
And so for me, what really broke me of it, there was, you know, there was a death, of a dog, which is weird. I don't know. It's weird. A dog died.
You always minimize that, but when your pets die, it fucking hurts
it
like
does.
A fire.
It hurt so much. And it made me, it shook me. I was like, because I had said I was an atheist before.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm an atheist, but I never believed it. I still kind of had this sort of like, you know, because I was hanging out with people that were atheists and I was like, yeah, I guess I'm an atheist. I don't really know. But when my dog died, I was like, no, I'm a legit atheist now. And this is weird because I had like, you know, because now there's no
So connect that dot. Like what with your dog dying?
My dog dying
confirmed that.
Realizing that I was actually going to die. Because all my whole life I had thought I was going to live forever. And there was a moment there that I had forgotten about death. I didn't put those two things together. You're a young kid, so you don't think a lot about death. And then death.
How old were you?
I was 22.
Wait, but so you're 22 and you say like you thought you were going to live for, I mean, you didn't actually think you were going to live forever. So, I mean, so.
Well, when I was, the thing is I don't know that I was ever really truly an atheist. I had said I was agnostic. I was like, I don't know what the real thing is. And at this point I was looking through all kinds of like Buddhist books and like, where am I? Like, what do I believe? I don't know what I believe yet. And maybe I live on forever. Maybe I get reincarnated. But I don't think that this is it. I think that, you know, there's something else.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the dog dies and I'm just like, fuck. Like my life just turned upside down. I was like,
turn upside down?
Yeah. It actually went like this. It twitched twice when it died too. So, but like the idea was,
I just keep thinking Will Smith and my life done flipped. Life done flipped. Upside down.
Done flip, turn upside down.
Yeah.
I never watched that show.
You didn't watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
No, I didn't. I missed that show.
Well, how do you know how to do the Carlton?
I don't know how to do
the Carlton. You don't know how to do the Carlton?
I don't know how to
do the fucking Carlton.
I don't know. I literally don't know.
Carlton.
I don't even know who Carlton is.
Oh, we have so much work to do.
Okay.
All right. So go on.
So the dog dies. I'm unconsolable for like 5 months. Like for 5 months of my life, I was in pangs of anxiety that I can't even describe. I was just like, and this, it's almost certainly had to happen to you, right? Like the moment you left religion, your brain is like, oh shit, I don't live forever. Holy fuck. I'm gonna die one day. Yeah. And it's gonna be over forever.
This is it. I would love to know about that moment of existential realization where you realize, like, oh my God, when I close my eyes that last time, there's nothing after that. Like, what is that? What was that like? Because you never thought that before.
Yeah, the whole your whole
I wanna
life.
Know about that moment.
Your
I wanna
life,
know about
you're
that
like,
moment.
Because for me, it was fucking up. It was it took me 5 or 6 months to get over that.
It still scares me occasionally.
It does for me too. Absolutely.
You know what I do to get rid of it? I don't think about it. I'm scared because I think that I'm going to experience the experience of not being.
Sure.
But there's no me and there's no experience. There's no one to receive the experience.
Yeah.
And so that's how I console myself is that I won't, there's no one to experience the experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that lets me set it to the side and be like, okay, what matters is.
You got to read The Apology.
Okay.
You got to read Plato's Apology. You got to just read it.
Before I was born.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? I think about that too. But I guess the impossible part for me, and again, this doesn't have to live in the show, but the impossible part for me is that I have never not been for the entirety of the experience
of you.
I have been, right?
Right.
So I don't have an experience called what was it like before I was born. I don't have that experience because there wasn't a me prior to that. So the challenging part is trying to establish the concept in a full and realized way of what it is to not be, because the entirety of my consciousness has been centered around the notion of being.
Yeah.
Right. I know that sounded like jibber jabber, but
like knowing that there will be, knowing that I don't, so think, knowing that I don't have to exist forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's not the obligation where I have to exist forever. Like I, there will be a day where I can just close the fucking door, hang it the fuck up and just be done. It like is freeing, like in a way, like as a Christian, I never would have thought that. When I was a Christian, the idea of infinity was kind of terrifying just in the fact of like just stressful. Like, I don't know. Like, I can't explain it.
There no, was just I, like I, I'm this, right with you.
There was
right
this anxiety with this idea of infinity and the fact that like I would just continue and like maybe part of it was just the idea that like there would never be any rest. Like I could never just be done. Like to me, there's something incredibly restful in knowing that one day I can just be done.
Hitch said that. I think Hitch was talking about stuff like that too.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a comfort in one day that you'll be done. You know, one of the things that scared the shit out of me when I was a Christian was the heat death of the universe. Because I was I was never a 6,000 year Christian. I was always a Catholic, and Catholics believe most of the science, right? So for me,
there's so much more rational.
The heat death of the universe, I was like, I'm going to watch everything slow down to near absolute zero. Where am I going to be and what's going to be happening? Because your but whole.
Can I ask you about that? Because like, don't you think that you're outside the universe at that point? I don't know the answer.
I always thought.
Like you're like up on a cloud watching
it. I always thought you're just part of the universe. So I never really thought I was outside of the universe. I always thought the universe
heaven
is us.
In the universe.
Heaven is a part of the universe.
Oh, that never.
And like I could travel wherever I wanted. I could do whatever I wanted. I could be wherever I wanted.
That
but
never occurred to me
until
right this second.
So
that was a possibility.
Yeah, because I always assumed
heaven was another place, like a different dimension or something.
Another realm.
That there is no physicality to it at all. That it's all magic.
Yeah.
Like, in not a shitty way. I just thought, like, it's all like a magical place. And there's the physical world and then there's the not physical world and they don't intersect. There's no intersection between.
No, there are definitely some who, you know, some religious traditions where, you know, Christian traditions where it's like an actual part of this physical realm. Yeah. I mean, definitely historically speaking, and as science, you know, brought more information that kind of whittled down, but there's still groups today where, like they think like there must be like a black hole that leads to heaven and, you know, like an actual physical heaven.
Really?
And that's where God is. And no, for real.
This is
fucking real. Yeah.
Like
I don't know the specifics to be able to,
it's
real.
Technology could get there alive.
Well, they would likely say that God would keep you from ever finding that sufficient technology.
Yeah, okay, but...
But that, yeah, but in theory, you could. If he didn't,
DNA has the technology, you're going to die.
Ah, yes.
That's what they would say. They'd be like, already possessed that technology.
Yeah, but I guess, like, I've never thought of it as not magical.
I heard a tape when I was sort of falling out of religion and I was seeking other stuff and I was trying to find meaning in my own life. I heard a tape of a guy who was telling a story about like he was trying to make science and religion marry. Hmm. And one of the things he was talking about was like, you know, we talk about, you know, how we don't understand how certain things work and how, but he's like, God can step outside of time. And so another thing is like, God can step outside of the universe too, right? Like, so like those were the things that we were taught. Like that's sort of something that, you know, God is something who is, he's a thing that can act outside of the realm in which we sort of are stuck in.
And I guess I always figured heaven was, I always figured.
Yeah. I never thought
the same
that.
Thing.
I always thought
I always
no matter what.
Heaven
Tom,
and time.
What's your background? Did you grow up in a non-believing home?
I didn't believe anything until I was 6 or 7 and I lived with my dad, and my dad was Methodist. Mm-hmm. But the Methodists are like, man, they're pig
Let's
roasts
have a pig
and
roast.
A habitat for
Let's
humanity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
They are. They're, so you don't do a lot of these big metaphysical theological questions. It's really just like, hey, we should do some hard work for people that need help, right? And that's most of my memories of church. It's singing songs and like doing a pig roast and a block party and like I don't remember any shit about Jesus. I don't remember any of that shit.
Yeah.
We didn't talk about that shit.
No
we talked
shit about like, Jesus. Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Very, very little. It was all about like, you know, my dad was a trustee. We went on Wednesdays and Sundays. So yeah. I went twice a week for a lot of, you know, for several years. I was the janitor for that church at one
point. But it's singing, right? It's all singing and shit, right?
It's, yeah, it's, well, it's like, it's not all singing, but like, it was all focused on like, you know, the joke is like, the joke is like, maybe if I work hard enough, shit won't happen. That's the meth. That's the joke of the Methodist, right? So it's all about like, work hard, do good work, be a good person. How do we do good work? Like the idea that I came away from Methodism with was that there was a method, and the method, right? Right.
That's exactly right. What, yeah. John Wesley's method, Methodism. Yeah. And, that's
and,
what it
and
is.
The method
yeah.
was how to be a good person mm-hmm. and to do right by other people. And so that was most of what I remember church focusing on. Like, so it was not theological in the same way. So I guess I feel like I made a lot of this shit up. And so I figured like, you died, your body's gone. I just never thought about it too much, but like you died, your body's gone, you go to heaven. Well, heaven's a magical place where time and space are just different.
Well, and I think most are that way. Like heaven, God, it's just like another realm. It's almost like if you take like everything that is like, okay, so, okay, Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you've seen Stranger Things.
Yeah, great.
And there's like another realm like imposed upon the real one. You know what I mean? Like it's the same buildings, the same everything's there, but it's like a whole nother like layer right. upon it. You know what I'm talking yeah. about? So like that's what it is. It's like the same world, the same God's there, but like you just can't see him. He's in like another realm, but like you can interact, but it's different.
So what happened when you stopped believing? Yeah. What was now you're talking about, you know, with this sort of universal, I think a lot of people probably relate to what you're thinking about, especially people that are deconverted. What does it change in you the moment you stop thinking there's another realm? How does that change you?
I mean, I went through for me. So you have a lot of Christians, even evangelical, you know, Christians
yeah.
who, where for them, even though they believe the Bible, they believe it's the inspired word of God and all that. Nonetheless, their like sense of morals, their ethics, like it's still like kind of, it's not necessarily a direct correlation with the Bible. Like they kind of set that apart and, you know, they just kind of go with what makes sense. For me though, like everything, like I was on that Jesus train hard and everything was connected to it. So once I set aside the Bible, like everything was up for grabs. And once I no longer believed in God, just like my entire world, my whole sense of identity, who I am, what is right and wrong. Like I was the as far extreme as you can go with that in terms of I had lost my moral core. I had lost everything. Oh. And I knew nothing, like because it was all tied to that. And now that was gone. And so now what the fuck? Like I have no idea. And so I
raped somebody. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I mean,
Drew's mom.
Well, but
Drew's mom. It's cool. Son seems really nice.
I did not rape anyone. I did not do any.
You didn't murder anybody.
No murders.
Yeah, you didn't steal a lot of money from somebody.
Right?
Yeah.
So, a few liquor stores. You rob a few liquor stores to see what it feels like.
You rape a few goats.
I just want to know.
Suddenly you're a goat fucker.
Just for a minute.
What is that about?
Just what does it feel like?
Yeah.
What's.
Stop. I don't need to wear the
a goat is one of God's creatures. I can't.
All creatures, great and small.
Oh, that shit's tight.
They those little pellet poops for a reason.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. Shoot those things out.
But no, but what?
It's a sphincter. One like an Asian hooker.
One note of interest.
Goes the wrong way.
What does that even mean? I don't even know what that means. Drew's very uncomfortable right
Drew
now.
Is.
No!
Hi, Drew's mom. How are you doing?
No, but one note that is important, maybe important. So even though I lost all moral core, and seriously, like I had with my faith, I lost my moral core. I lost any sense of, I lost it all and was working to just reconstruct everything from scratch. And, even then, no rapes, no murders. Like even then, like
sure, of course.
I yeah, still so, had, can I back
but,
you up?
But Christians though would say, you know, I mean, you know, the stereotype,
yeah, because
you know, and so, but yeah. even there, even though I did legitimate, yeah. most atheists, have a moral. I had no moral core for at least a year there. Like I just didn't know.
You didn't.
But
know
I still intuitively knew.
Yeah,
it was right.
I want to ask. I want to back you up. did you lose your moral core or did you not understand? So
yes.
Did you not understand why things were like right and wrong going. Versus, you know, things are right and wrong. You didn't, you're not going to go out and rape and murder, right? Cause you know, you can't, but you're not sure why you can't. You're not sure what.
Yes.
Am I drawing a distinction?
That's good. No, you're exactly right. Okay. I still had a moral core, or maybe, you know, I mean, so some will say, listen, you know, obviously the stereotype that we have all heard many, many times from, you know, the far right, whatever, is that, you know, without a God, because you can do whatever you want, you're going to go out and rape. And then you'll have other people will say, listen, yeah, I can do whatever I want, but I don't want to rape and kill.
Sure.
And so I don't.
Yeah.
And I mean, so maybe you could say that for me too. Like I did not have a recognizable moral core in that I didn't know what it was. And honestly, I was kind of open to whatever. Like I was just like, you know, honestly, I don't know. Like I really am open to whatever. And part of me kind of wondered if I would become like this terrible, terrible, evil person. Part of me kind of wondered, is that where this is going?
But, you know,
because I was legitimately open to everything.
But the
important part is that, but I didn't want to rape and kill.
But before I became a Christian, or before I left Christianity, I was sort of seeking at a certain time. And I knew this guy who had told me flat out, he said, I would steal from the register here if I knew there wasn't a punishment, if I knew God wasn't watching me. And there are people out there with the exact opposite thought of you that, you know, they would have said, fuck it. If there's nobody watching me, then I'll do whatever I want. And so I think that there's a spectrum. There's clearly a spectrum of people and morality that believe in
Here's
God.
What I think. I think that people who grow up in that whatever bubble, they're told their whole lives that without God, this is what you'll want. And so they regurgitate that shit and say, oh yeah, if I didn't have God, I would want that. Because they just,
not because they actually want it
and they're just restraining themselves. Yeah. You know what I mean? Maybe for some that is the case. They do want that shit and they're just working overtime to restrain themselves.
Sure.
But for
like
most,
Jim Baker.
Yeah. But for most, they don't have to work to restrain themselves because they don't want it. Like maybe it sounds kind of sexy and cool and fun, like in the movies, but at the end of the day, they don't want all that goes with it. And so they'll restrain themselves with or without God.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? Like
there's plenty of other factors that prevent us from doing things that we know are wrong to do. Right. So in order for you to do something that you know is wrong, the pull has to be greater than the push. Right.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it's like, yeah, I want to steal from the register because I want money, but it's like, yeah, but there's also law and order that's involved. You know, there's so many, there's
you lose
so many
your job.
Right.
Well, and I mean,
the job pays you every week for $50.
I'm going to steal $50 and lose $400. Like there's 100.
Well, I wasn't even thinking about an employee stealing from the register. Yeah. I was just thinking about a guy on the other side of the tail from the register, but this is an employee.
Like employee who's saying I would steal from the register. Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think generally speaking, most people do the things they want to do that they feel are right. And then after they've performed the action, they evaluate how they got to the action, right? I don't think it works in the reverse most of the time. And I could be wrong. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. But I generally do believe that most people rationalize post hoc rather than into it, right?
Sure,
I don't think most people think into the situation.
Yeah. Well,
they think
after
the situation.
I also think that those who believe, you know, not all people who are believers in a God have this particular brand of theology, but those who do believe that there is a God who will one day right all wrongs and bring about this like day of justice, they are so much so betting on that day of justice that they just kind of allow, well, whatever shit happens today, however people are fucked over, they'll get their due in the end. And I think that breeds a lack of empathy, which may be obvious. I don't know. But so I think that within that theological spectrum, you have this, you find a situation where people are significantly less empathetic. And so they're able to say, oh, fuck yeah, yeah, I'd steal from the register, because they don't have that empathy. But once you lose that feeling of, oh, well, God is judge and one day he'll right all wrong.
Yeah.
So yeah, go ahead and fuck them today and one day they'll get their due, where all of a sudden you take that out. It's like, wait a minute. No, this is everything. I think that shift – automatically, I mean, if you're a decent fucking human, but if you have that potential,
yeah, right,
you're automatically going to become that much more empathetic because you realize this is everything that's there.
Is that what humanism did for you? Did humanism snap you back a little?
Well, for me, I actually considered myself a humanist before I was an atheist. So I actually consider myself a Christian humanist. So kind of our
that's like a cronut, right? That's like the same thing,
right? Yeah, it's like
you gotta wait in a real long line. It's like, okay, all right.
No, I mean, you get disappointed.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. Don't you say a word.
Wait, cronuts.
Hold it. Yeah.
Cronuts. Do we have some?
Hold on.
I want a fucking cronut.
Donut or Danish?
Oh, fucking donut.
Yeah, motherfucker.
And cake all the way. I don't
fucking A. Okay, hold on. One more question.
Cake
more
donuts, questions. Right? Wait, is this guy a Danish fuck?
Yeah, he's a fucking Danish guy.
Oh, my God. Oh, wait. It's too much time in the glory hole. He just likes all that creamy fucking jizz down his fucking throat.
Right? So here's the other question.
That's my heart space question you're fucking with right now.
You're stuck at home. And all you have is Neapolitan ice cream, right? That's the only thing you have.
I know,
right?
You have that face. I feel the same way.
I have the same face.
Big flash. Okay, it's the end of the world.
That's it. Do you take a little
vanilla
or maybe take a little strawberry? Do you scoop across or do you scoop individually?
Wait, what?
You have to eat Neapolitan ice cream because the world is a shitty place. Okay. How do you scoop the ice cream? Individual flavors,
because there's like
across.
Different swirls across. Do you
scoop across or do you scoop individual scoops of
More likely than not. No, I would scoop across.
Yeah. He's a good man after all.
Here's the thing.
You're awful.
Is it fucking Neapolitan ice cream or is it a fucking mini box of pistachio and a mini box of vanilla or whatever chocolate.
You're in a hellscape anyway. You might as well make the best of it and not scoop across. Because if you're stuck with Neapolitan ice cream, you can't throw it away and get like a good ice cream flavor. Okay. You might as well just eat the chocolate out of it. All those assholes who scoop across like fucking crazy people.
You scoop across.
No. You're the type of person who would steal from the till. No. That's all I'm saying.
I would
steal
from you.
Yeah.
Check your wallet right now.
Listen, I want whatever the experience is. I want the fullness of the divine designed experience.
He's going to say divine.
Old habits die hard. Unless you murder them because you have no moral center. Murderer. Hydra's mom.
Listen, I would rape the ice cream before I would.
So, Drew, if people were going to find your work, people were going to find your book, where would they look?
Where is your mom?
Stop it.
It wasn't me.
Far, far the fuck away from you. You fucking slimy asshole.
You brought her up.
So I mean the book is on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, you know, stores, wherever.
We'll put a link in this week's show notes.
Cool.
But if people are gonna find you and the stuff that you do.
So, drewbakius.com, just my name, and humanistcoach.com.
I think you should spell that last name, man.
Spell that last name? Yeah. All right. So, the first part is Drew, and then BEKIUS.com.
Yeah. That's how I would have spelled it, too.
Yeah.
Drew Bakius. Fuck you. drewbakius.com, and then humanistcoach.com. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us today, Drew.
Thanks so much, man.
Great to be here. You fucking assholes are a pain in the ass, but well worth the pleasure.
So we want to thank Drew Bakius for joining us today. What a great interview that was.
It was a lot of
fun.
Real interesting. It's an interesting story. Fun guy to have in studio.
Yeah, we're hopefully going to have him on in the future. He's really, really interesting, funny guy. And Drew's mom, call me. We'll set something up. But we want to thank Drew for coming on. We'll leave all his information on the show notes if you want to check out all the stuff he's doing, if you want to buy his book, or if you want to check out humanistcoach.com. We'll leave all that stuff on this week's show notes. Drew, thank you for coming in.
Great guy.
That's going to wrap it up for this week. We're going to leave you like we always do with the Skeptic's Creed.
Credulity is not a virtue. It's fortune cookie cutter, mommy issue, hypno-Babylon bullshit. couched in scientician double bubble toil and trouble, pseudo quasi alternative acupunctuating pressurized stereogram pyramidal free energy healing water downward spiral brain dead pan sales pitch late night info docutainment. Leo Pisces, cancer cures, detox, reflex, foot massage, death and towers, tarot cards, psychic healing, crystal balls, Bigfoot, Yeti, aliens, churches, mosques, and synagogues, temples, dragons, giant worms, Atlantis, dolphins, truthers, birthers, witches, wizards, vaccine nuts, shaman healers, evangelists, conspiracy, doublespeak, stigmata, nonsense. Expose your sides. Thrust your hands, bloody, evidential, conclusive. Doubt even this.
The opinions and information provided on this podcast are intended for entertainment purposes only. All opinions are solely that of Glory Hole Studios, LLC. Cognitive Dissonance makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, currentness, suitability, or validity of any information, and will not be liable for any errors, damages, or butthurt arising from consumption. All information is provided on an as-is basis. No refunds. Produced in association with the local Dairy Council and viewers like you.